Hi, listeners. This is a quick thank you for listening and for your ongoing support. If you're enjoying the program, please consider clicking the follow or subscribe button if you haven't done so already. It really helps us out. There's no better way to support us than doing that or sharing the show with a friend, colleague, family member, or any new or expecting parent in your life. It's totally appreciated. On with the show. Hi, I'm Sarah Trott, and welcome to the Fourth Trimester Podcast. I'm a new mama, and this podcast is all about postpartum care for the first few months following birth, the time period also known as the fourth trimester. My postpartum doula, Esther Gallagher, is my co-host. She's a mother, grandmother, perinatal educator, birth and postpartum care provider. Fourth trimester care, our topic, is about the practical, emotional, and social support parents and baby require. And importantly, it helps set the tone for the continuing journey of parenting. Hi, welcome back to the Fourth Trimester Podcast. I'm Sarah Trott, and I'm here with my co-host, Esther Gallagher. And we are also here with our special guest of the day, who we'll introduce in a moment. I wanted to just remind everyone that you can go to our website, which is fourthtrimesterpodcast.com, and sign up for our newsletter. And you can also go to the site to see some interesting recipes that we have in our recipe section. And you can also sign up to be a sponsor of our podcast through Patreon. So thank you for anyone interested in doing that. So our guest today is Marianne Esser, and she is a woman who is a recent new mama for the second time. She's living here in the U.S. now, but she hails from Holland, and she is going to chat with us a little bit about the postpartum care experience in the United States versus where she grew up. And then also we're going to talk about nutrition because she has spent her more recent years career-wise working for a company that specializes in making fresh, organic, delicious food for babies, toddlers, and mamas, helping out with this modern or postmodern family unit when they need really good food. And we are so lucky to have her here today. So hi, Marianne.
Hello. Hi, Sarah and Esther.
Hi,
Marianne. Thank you so much. Hi. Yeah.
Good to hear your voice again, of course.
Yeah, it is. And I sometimes scout the streets if I see Esther on her bike on your way to a family in need. Thank you so much for having me. A big part of what I've been doing in my life is around caring for people. And meaning I was helping people in organizations to connect with the strategy of the organization to feel comfortable and to align and to collaborate in an effective way. But also in my second career, as I would say here in San Francisco, it was about caring for the food we would make for little babies and toddlers and recently for the mamas.
That's so great.
Yeah.
Well, Marianne, you've had a little bit of personal experience around that. Would you be willing to tell us a little bit about your experiences in the immediate and early postpartum periods with each of your boys? And
yes.
Maybe just talk about what that was like for you personally. And if you have any insights into sort of the larger cultural experience, we'd love to have you share with us.
Yeah, I will. I think it's a long story. So I think basically postpartum care is a life-changing period. Being postpartum is a life-changing period. And in Holland, they get it. They have in our basic universal health system, we have 8 to 10 days of care after delivery. So that means that a maternity nurse will come in for a couple of hours, depending on your needs, but definitely for 8 days, you can count on them coming in and help you heal, help you get started. Mm-hmm. They don't only focus on the baby and all kinds of things that you need to know around the baby, like bathing a baby or what for clothes, how to keep the baby warm, but they also really make it an effort to take care of mom, to make sure that she regains strength and to make sure that she rests her body. And you can do that all in your own home. So somebody comes to your house to help you start your new life with your baby in your own home. You do go to a pediatrician with your baby, but that's basically the only thing you need to do for baby.
Okay.
So you need to go to a pediatrician. They don't do a house visit unless mom's not able. Well, but then dad can go.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Just curious.
And then also this maternity nurse, we call it an kraamverzorger. You can also ask them to do household chores and to take care of another child if they're there. Mm-hmm. And they're just basically there, I think, invaluable for those first days, because it's all, especially if it's your firstborn, it's all new. And then, well, with the second, you still have questions and you forgot from the experience from the first time, you forgot a lot of things. And maybe if breastfeeding didn't go well the first time, you need somebody that is experienced with that for the second time. And yeah, I think it was invaluable for me, especially to have you here, Esther, because I just knew that I needed care. I needed somebody that would focus on me, mm-hmm. would take care of me.
Yeah. Those first days are very particular, aren't they? Emotionally, physically, socially, all those things are pretty raw.
They're pretty raw. I think that's a good... And although you read a lot of stuff and you've learned a lot of things and you've talked about it with friends and you've shared experiences and you have the intention to be a super mom second time around, it's... And to want to do it all by yourself because you feel strong enough to do that because you did it once, it's still raw. And it's surprisingly, there's more to it than you think.
Mm-hmm.
I think
no matter how many times you do it.
I know. Yeah, exactly. I think that's true. Mm-hmm. And then to compare it, first time, second time, I think, in Holland, the care system is really, it's really well set up. And if you,
well, and it's for everyone.
And it's for everyone.
Everyone.
Yeah. It's for everyone. Yeah.
Yeah, not just those who could afford to pay a doula. Yeah.
No. It's in your insurance.
Yeah.
In Holland, everybody is insured one way or the other. Yeah. Yeah.
So, Marianne, did you grow up always knowing that this is just part of life? That when women have a baby, someone comes and cares for them. That's just an assumption, and that's something even children are aware of.
I'm not sure how much children are aware of it, but it was in my system. I have two younger brothers, and when I was seven, the youngest was born. So I was a little bit. I remember from that phase that we had somebody coming in and help, and she actually became a friend of the family. We've seen her for years. While we were growing up, when we were young, it's as I was starting this conversation with you, I mentioned Esther's kind of family. She was the first one to come into our home when we came home with our newborn, and in that emotional time where a lot of hormones, of course, take over, it makes a special bond between that person that is experienced. Knows what you need and feels you, and can give you all the information that you need, can answer all your questions, but also, will listen to your needs, will listen to your, what you want and what you don't want. And I think, especially the second time, I really knew what I wanted. And I spoke with, a few doulas here because, I knew we would be alone for the first few days, and I also knew I didn't want that. So I interviewed, I think three doulas, and Esther came, and that felt good. Mm-hmm. And we asked her to come to our home for a couple of times, and then focus on the things we needed, and that was super helpful. Yeah. Super helpful. I would almost wanted to say that. So the first time around in Holland, we did have somebody come in, a nurse, but she was an intern. And since I did not know what I needed, she focused mainly on baby and just getting everything in the routine going. Mm-hmm. But in hindsight, like looking back at that period, I think I needed more. And knowing
more
that,
you.
More for me. Yes, more for me. Delivery was a tough one first time around. And it, I think I didn't realize I wanted to be like all the American women that just, are up on their feet within a couple of days. And that's what I thought I would. I thought I would be up and running in no time. And I think I did, but that made me have a way longer, period of recovery. It didn't help me. I didn't rest enough. I think I had a slight postpartum depression. Even thinking about it now makes me wonder if I still have it. because it makes me emotional looking back. And I think that experience is something I definitely learned from and knew I wanted different the second time around. And I took way more care and looked at what kind of care I needed and organized it. So this period would be more enjoyable as you want it to be and as how it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Marianne, I want to just briefly speak to, you know, those first few days working with you and how deeply emotional it was for you. I think in some ways, maybe you are being a little bit triggered, as we say, from your first birth experience or postpartum experience. And, you know, you were quite concerned that the breastfeeding would go poorly or that you would heal poorly naturally because of your first experience, which while it was good enough, was maybe not as good as it could have been. Mm-hmm. And I just remember that you were just very deeply worried and concerned. And this is the reason I point to it is not to point to you per se so much as to say that it's very common for me when I'm working with second time moms, often who I didn't work with the first time, they didn't know they could find a doula the first time. And so now they're, you know, they got lucky. They found out there was somebody who would come take care of them. But in any case, my experience with you is very common experience that I have with second time moms who just, you know, are just so concerned that things go well, and are sort of flashing back to the first time when what they didn't know about how to slow down and how to heal and recover and take their time could hurt them. Mm-hmm. You know, that mythological American woman who jumps right up and runs a marathon idea. So maybe you can... maybe we can talk together about some of the things that you and your family found really helpful both times in terms of, you know, how to eat, how to sleep, how to just manage healing and recovering.
I think especially for my need, because I focused on me since my husband was there to take care of my other son. Mm-hmm. So I focused, I think, in our conversation also on how you would help me recover and how you would help me and baby and get started. I think actually that's basically what I asked you to help us get a good start. Mm-hmm. I think that was my focus. And then for a big part of that, I think two big parts. One was food, nutrition. And one was expertise, just talking about situations that were going on at that time. They were about our other son getting involved in this new family life and having him feel good. But it was also about how my husband could deal with certain situations. It was about breastfeeding. It was about how I could lay down while breastfeeding, for example, which was something I've tried the first time, but unsuccessfully. I remember calling you, I think at one point late at night, being really, really frustrated about the pain I experienced while breastfeeding, and all the all that comes with it. But the second, the other part was really focusing on food and nutrition to help my recovery. And one of the things that we started with, I came home from, had a C-section. My son was pretty big. So in a way I felt like I couldn't get him out. The first thing you did was saying that I didn't need the iron pills anymore.
Yeah.
Because with the iron pills comes the constipation, and you need to take pills for that too. So we started to take those out of the routine of taking pills. I had some medication for pain still because of the C-section. And we just focused on what kind of foods we could add to my diet in order for me to have a good digestion and to get it up and running again like it was running.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So lots of blood building foods, but with lots and lots of vegetables so that you wouldn't be constipated.
Yeah. And you made me this this stew with all kinds of dried fruits.
We call that a compote. Yeah.
The compote, yes. and that was, I think, everything you made was delicious, not only because you're a good cook, but also because I was probably very hungry, just because I needed to recover. I just read something about one of the, because I was looking up some things on the care in Holland, and there was this one woman that said, the size of the placenta is almost the size of the wound you leave inside, like that's left inside. Mm-hmm. Which makes it kind of in a perspective. So mm-hmm. you know you have to recover and you have to heal. Mm-hmm. And how to heal, that's, I think, basically it's a peaceful mind, getting rest in your mind, getting rest in your body, and nourish it, feed it, mm-hmm. so it can recover. Yeah. And that's what we both focused on. And one of the things I remember you making me, and especially telling my mom and yours to do, is to make me snacks.
Yes. Yeah.
Snacks for midnight, snacks for whatever time during the day, but have some things prepared so I could snack on foods while I was breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because after all, if you're hungry, you might not even know that you're hungry, but it's going to be awful hard to sleep if your body says, hey, I need some nourishment, right?
Yep. Yeah.
So, yeah. Marianne, I like how you just said rest for your mind and rest for your body. And I like that you put it in that order. I would say that I think that we forget that both the mind and the body have difficulty resting when we're not nourished.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
It's just compelling that we would go out and hunt and gather if we were hungry.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that oftentimes in the first few days of the postpartum period, there's so much emphasis on baby and literally no emphasis on mom, especially not nutrition-wise. In the hospital setting, it's not that they don't want you to be well nourished, but they really leave it to you to do that.
Yeah.
And that is, it's a whole process that you have to go through to get food to your you know, to your room. And if you don't feel hungry, you're not thinking to tell the people around you, hey, I just need food. food.
Yep.
So that can be kind of challenging.
Well, and I think it's like if you go to the supermarket hungry, you'll end up with things that you don't need or are maybe not the best choice.
Yes.
I really think preparing yourself, your freezer, your fridge, and also your family or the people that are coming to help or your doula to focus on foods that you need for your body to recover is something you want to prepare for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's great when people bring over a giant pot of stew or, you know, a big thing of prepared vegetables, etc. So that's wonderful. And then, as you were pointing to earlier, there are all those little mini meals that moms need for those random breastfeeds throughout the day and night.
Yep.
It can be really handy to have somebody thinking about those and preparing those and getting them within striking distance of where you're going to be breastfeeding. So, yeah. Would you like to talk a little bit about the business of feeding new families?
From my experience with you, the new line for our business, the Mama Line, actually was born.
Excellent.
No, yeah. I remember talking to you and to Kristen Kotek, a friend of ours who used to work in the kitchen with our business. And she was a nutritionist, also graduated from Bowman College. And she put together some recipes for us with ingredients that are nourishing for mom, not only postpartum, but on a regular basis. This is just a good soup. Yeah. It's kind of we call it the mama stew, and it has a ton of vegetables, and then we use some fresh herbs and some spices, but also a super rich bone broth. Mm. And I think bone broth is a really easy way, for people to recover or to heal bodies, to heal their body. There's, I think, lots of positive things. It improves your gut health. There's lots of amino acids in there, and it's tasty.
Yeah, it's tasty, and it's got that sort of deep foundational nutrition that so much of I hate to call it traditional American food because I think we've lost the deeper tradition of nourishing food in America, but we're coming back around to it. You know, clearly the last decade has turned in the direction of how do we really nourish people, and are we maybe throwing away the best parts of the elements of nutrition that we need? Mm-hmm. And so it's true, bone broths, and even just really good vegetable stocks. If somebody's vegetarian, if, you know, really putting together the elements to draw the minerals, mm-hmm. you know, and the vitamins out of the vegetables and in a concentrated way, and then use that for preparing, you know, a vegetarian super stew is so much more nutritious. And these things can be made of what we would consider compost, you know, all the ends of stuff that you would normally think, well, I'm just going to toss that in the compost pile, because I chopped it off to make something look nice. All of that can go into a soup stock pot. along with bones if you have them, of course.
Yep.
So that's great.
Hi, listeners. I have some exciting news to share with you today. We've partnered with Every Mother, your go-to destination for evidence-based exercise therapy regimens. Whether you're dealing with diastasis recti, preparing for birth, or navigating postpartum recovery, Every Mother has your back. With personalized daily routines tailored to your core and pelvic floor needs, they're here to support you every step of the way. Say hello to a stronger, healthier you with Every Mother. Visit their website today and use code 4thTrimester10 for 10% off your personalized regimen. That's fourth spelled out, F-O-U-R-T-H, trimester10 for 10% off, because every mother deserves the very best.
Yeah, so we
I'm so happy that I inspired.
Yeah. No, you did.
Approach, yeah.
You did, because I just I did realize it, but then I experienced it to be so helpful. And I was there are more people like me out there, and there are moms out there that just don't have the time to make all these good foods for themselves. And why don't we make it? And then people can buy it from us.
Okay. And just full disclosure, as the Fourth Trimester podcast, we don't get sponsorship. We have no affiliation with this company at all. We just happen to really like the idea and really like what you're doing. It sounds great. I mean, as a new mom myself, I mean, it sounds so convenient to have this stuff delivered. I had a really good experience using a cookbook that recommended different puree mixes. And I made a lot of my own food. Mm-hmm. And I would spend one afternoon steaming and blitzing fruits and vegetables and then putting them into silicone ice cube trays and freezing them. And I would end up with months worth of food that I could just kind of keep as little perfect little ice cube shapes, which are 1 ounce roughly each. Mm-hmm. And then I, you know, at the beginning of the day, I could pop out 2 or 3 ice cubes, depending on where my baby was and how much she was eating, but, you know, have them defrost on the counter and they would be ready and they were fresh. I knew what was in them. I didn't, I had no question about like the quality of the food. I knew it was organic. I made it. But yeah, that's so neat. I mean, if anyone doesn't have the time to do that themselves.
Maybe not the time, but also maybe not the confidence, or they don't like to make food. Like some people think, really like making food, or it's their passion, and others sometimes don't. And I taught a, making your own baby food class in the past, and would exactly advise them to do that. What you did, Sarah, to freeze, to plan some time and to freeze some foods for your baby. And you don't have to worry about it then all day or every day. And sometimes even go to our website and look, or just scout for inspiration on recipes. Cause what I think makes our baby food kind of different from others is that we use a bone broth, and that we use a spice, and that we have different flavors on a monthly changing menu.
Nice.
Marianne,
I was going to just give a shout out to my dad, because 39 years ago when I was having my daughter, the present he sent me, you know, sort of like the shower present, was a baby food cookbook. And it was all the same idea, you know, using fresh produce, and other, foods to nourish your baby. And by the way, listeners, we're talking about babies who are at least 4 months old when we talk about babies eating food, because of course, breast milk is really what babies can digest for the first 4 to 6 months. And then your baby will start to show you that they're looking for something to eat other than breast milk, when they become developmentally ready. And so it's a wonderful thing to have, really nourishing foods. And the other thing that I wanted to say, which I love about your nutrition model, Marianne, is that you change up the flavors, and that there, these, you know, you're not just giving completely bland, embellished foods to babies, because Gosh, so often I run into people who have really limited their diets during pregnancy for whatever reason, and then eat a very limited diet while they're breastfeeding because they think that, you know, onions are going to give their baby gas or something, which is in most cases not probably true. And then they have a child, surprise, surprise, whose palate is so limited that they really can't get enough nutrition. So I want to just shout out to the community here. Eat well while you're pregnant. Eat those spicy foods that you've always liked. And your baby's getting primed to eat spicy foods if you do so. If you dumb down your own diet, not only will you not be getting good nutrition, but your child will be really being programmed to have a limited diet. So barring allergies, true food allergies, you really should be as flamboyant as you can.
Yeah, as adventurous.
Yes, adventurous. Yeah, that's adventurous the word I was looking for.
As you can. I think, and I'm not an expert on this, but I've learned that flavor development of your baby starts in the womb.
Correct.
So it's all there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It starts in the womb, and then while you're breastfeeding, your baby still gets a lot of the flavors of the foods that you eat. Mm-hmm. So I always try to preach eat like the rainbow, mm-hmm. also. And I think that's what we try to do in our kitchen too, is we try to focus on seasonal fruits and veggies also. And we try to scout them and get them locally. Which obviously makes it seasonal, and that's how you get a lot of variety as well.
Yeah. Speaking of which, asparagus, one of the best vegetables for humans, very nutritious. Those are in season right now. I saw some peeking out of my garden plot, just this past week.
Nice.
And of course that's in season right now in March.
Yes, of course.
In San Francisco.
Good point, Sarah.
And
I love that rainbow approach, you know, purple cabbage and blueberries and cauliflower and broccoli and those are all coal family vegetables. What are asparagus, lettuces,
yams.
Come in different colors, yams, oh my gosh, well, we say yams, but really they're sweet potatoes.
Exactly.
Different colors of different potatoes, you know, they come in different colors and those different colors mean different nutrients. I'm sort of perusing the produce section in my mind right now, and green beans and blue beans if they have them, and
butternut squash.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Who doesn't
apples.
Love that stuff? Apples.
Yeah. Carrots. And they're a nice blend together as well.
Yes. Yeah. And onions and garlic and ginger and turmeric and marjoram and, you know, all the herb, basil and oregano and chives. And
there's just so much information out there about doing this. And I know the book that I followed really recommended, you know, like the classic, introduce something new for a few days, wait. You know, and make sure that, you know, you don't have certain reactions to different foods. Mm-hmm. And then once you know that the things that you've tried so far are fine, then start the blending, mm-hmm. then start the experimentation. Mm-hmm. My baby was in love with avocados from the start. I also want to mention like beans. I want to throw beans out there. Refried mm-hmm. beans are such a hit. They're already mushed up and they're protein and they're delicious.
Peas.
You just want to probably take care of the salt content because sometimes they can be very salty. If they're refried or if they're like star-bought. If you can make your own, that's awesome.
Yep.
You know, little bits of very carefully checked fish so you don't give your baby any bones. Chicken and chicken livers. Dark meat. If possible.
Yeah. Avoid honey, mm-hmm. right? Avoid honey is what they say because of botulism.
Yeah. For the first year. basically, you can give your baby anything, I think, except for honey for a whole year, the whole first year. Because recently they actually changed the recommendation for peanuts and peanut butter. Because they discovered that postponing giving your baby peanuts or peanut butter, in the way that they can handle it, of course. But it postponing exposure can actually stimulate, I'm not sure if I'm saying this the right way, but it can create the allergy or it can.
Yeah. So exposure to small amounts is good.
Yeah. And definitely eat it yourself while you're pregnant and breastfeeding.
Yeah. You know, there was a study about vegans in the UK who were relying on peanuts and peanut butter as their primary source for protein. And that led to babies having allergies. So it was one of those, they were getting too much and they were building up antigens. And so you can imagine there must be some sweet spot in between, right? Like, you ought to have some, but it shouldn't be the only thing you eat for protein. But that's true of everything, right?
Yeah. I think that's about variety and size. It has the proportions.
Well, let's circle back around to moms and mom nutrition as well. And I love the idea of, it's not something that I make for my mamas because, the amounts that I would want to make for any given time that I was going to sit down and make them would be huge actually. But things like empanadas and tamales as a little snack that you, that you can have. And, you know, I realize not everybody's lucky enough to live in a city like San Francisco where you can get these things just anywhere.
Off the street, almost.
In fact, I will just say, I just had two of the most delicious empanadas on my way over here. One was mushrooms and one was corn, and they were just delightful. But what a great idea as something to put on a snack tray. You know, buy a dozen and then, you know, have one or two of those, in between meals or in the middle of the night when you're hungry while you're breastfeeding your baby.
You can stock up on those and you could put them in the freezer and then maybe just put them in the toaster, to warm up. That's a quick win almost for a mom to get some nutrition. I think one of the things I was, really surprised about is what I used to believe was not true about how you could up your milk supply. I think that is one of the things that a lot of moms worry about. If you will have enough milk. What I've learned, and again, I'm not an expert, but what I've learned is that there has been no proof or there's no research that has proven that there is a food that improves or ups milk supply. The only thing I know of is that if you take it out, you'll make new milk. If you, if your baby drinks your milk or if you pump your milk, what comes out will be
replaced.
And so I think with that in mind, I think one of the important things is for moms to have sort of a comfort food, which ultimately will increase relaxation, which can encourage milk supply, which can encourage letdown and enhance milk supply. So I would focus on what we were previously discussing, helping mom feel happy and peaceful and relaxed in her mind, and therefore feel more confident about milk supply.
You know, in my background, there's a lot of herbalism approaches to milk and milk supply. And so there are some things that we've traditionally thought that are best to avoid. And those are any herbs and in particular sage. and parsley in large quantities because they're very estrogenic. Oh, yeah. So they have a hormonal effect. And estrogen is antagonistic to prolactin. And so generally we tell moms, like, don't go overboard eating sage, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And on the other side of that, like, eat as much, you know, other good things and things that, you know, there are lots of herbs that are purported to be kind of relaxing and oxytocin and inviting kinds of herbs. Again, don't go overboard. It's not like you need them, but you can include them in your food. And a lot of people are big on eating fenugreek because it's a classic Indian herb from India that's purported to increase milk supply. Whether or not it does is a very good question, but some people really just like it and like the flavor. And it's new and different to them, but they don't realize that they've been eating fenugreek and yellow curry a lot of the time. So, you know, if you like curry, just eat curry.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to take fenugreek as a medicine necessarily.
Well, and it's in that nice mother's milk tea.
Right.
And I think the ritual of boiling water, mm-hmm. pouring it into your mug, sitting down with your hot tea and relaxing is helpful in and of itself.
Exactly.
And I think that's lovely. Staying hydrated is really important. Mm-hmm. Some people talk about porridge and oats being an aid to lactation. So, I mean, whether or not it's true, oats are healthy and that doesn't hurt anything.
Right. And so oats are calming. They're high in magnesium and calcium. And so they're calming to the central nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
So if that doesn't help you make more milk, what would, you know, that just seems like a good thing.
I know personally that when I needed to have sweeter things on my diet. When I ate a balance of sweeter things, my milk production was higher.
Mm.
It's because naturally, I don't know if it's because I have Italian background or what, but I'm drawn to more savory foods. But when I had more of a balance and I ate a sweet thing here or there, it helped me. Now, I don't mean like junk food, sweet food, but just
stuffed dates, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Or juice.
Remember those, Marianne?
Yeah, yeah. Delicious.
Yes. And so easy, right? Anybody can whip up, you know, 4 stuffed dates for you. If there's some goat cheese or peanut butter or almond butter in the fridge, you can stuff those into a date.
Definitely.
Quick snack. No baking involved. Yeah. So this was wonderful, Marianne. Thank you so much for coming along today. Is there anything you'd like to add before we wrap up for today?
No, I think this has been very nice to talk about the experience. I think partly in Holland and the last couple of years here in San Francisco around my babies and around food. I think that sums up my two passions in life.
Yeah, mine too.
I would count babies and food as two of my passions as well.
Well, it was so wonderful to have you on. I hope I get to see you before you return to Holland.
We have to meet. We have to make a date.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much. And, you know, I hope that our listeners can take away, you know, one piece of information that came out of this, which stood out for me, which is that it's possible to have care after you have a baby, even if it's not what you experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think growing up in a country where it was second nature to have that support is really wonderful. My hope is that all women eventually feel that getting support that they need right after they have a baby is second nature, and that they know that there's help out there and that they feel comfortable asking for it and seeking out the resources that are available. So thank you so much for sharing your stories.
Yeah. One of the places people around you can learn about how to care for you in the postpartum period is this podcast that Sarah and I have, I think, done such a nice collaboration on. And so, if you're out there and you wonder about how you could be cared for in the fourth trimester and you don't know that there's doulas in your community, there might not be. But maybe there are friends around you who just need a little coaching. This, I think, listening to episodes of our podcast might really help them get ready to help you. when your baby arrives.
Absolutely. Well, thanks a lot, everyone. And we will see you next time on the Fourth Trimester Podcast. Don't forget to check out our website. We'll post more recipes. This was a very food heavy episode. So I think we have ideas for more recipes we can post. So check those out and do sign up for our newsletter, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks, Marianne.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You can find out more about Esther Gallagher on esthergallagher.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast in order to hear more from us. Thank you for listening, everyone, and I hope you'll join us next time on the Fourth Trimester. The theme music on this podcast was created by Sean Trott. Hear more at soundcloud.com/SeanTrott. Special thanks to my true loves, my husband Ben, daughter Penelope, and baby girl Evelyn. Don't forget to share the Fourth Trimester podcast with any new and expecting parents. I'm Sarah Trott. Goodbye for now.
Hello again, Bicycle Man. I know you're doing all that you can. I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I'll sing a song for you. You got your wheels, you got your gears. You ride around town without any fear. You got your pedals, you got your brakes. You always wear your helmet for safety's sake. Song for you.